we're always going to have, like you say, that gap. And what you learn is that the fun is in the gap. But when you're a beginner, you feel it's not fun.
Hello and welcome to Art Juice. This is honest, generous and humorous conversations that will feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Alice Sheridan.
And me, Louise Fletcher.
And today we're going to dive into a topic prompted by a lovely new listener email that I got. Eric in sunny Florida, building your boats. Hello. It was lovely to hear from you. I won't read it out word for word, but basically Eric's saying he is new to making art. He's absolutely loving it. He's all in and working on it every day, but full of so many questions, all about how to find what direction to go in. He mentions possibly taking classes close to home, but enjoys just kind of listening along while he's working, and wondered if we had any advice or wanted to have a conversation about it.
Now, Eric mentioned that he was copying things as a way of practicing.
Yeah, he said, I'm copying things from the website or books, but I really want to create my own.
Because I come across that a lot with beginner students, where that does seem to be a common way in, that we either copy other people's artwork or we copy photographs. So maybe we do famous people portraits, or we do landscapes we've got a photograph of. And I remember going to this watercolor class when I was in America, and I was trying to get back into art. And I went to this class for watercolors, and we went in, and the lady who was teaching the class said, take a photograph out of the box at the front, and then we're going to paint whichever photograph you choose. And there were all things like some boats in a harbor, and really, like, they would have ended up being very just twee. And I had paid for the class, and I rang Philip and said, I really just want to come home. I don't want to do this. It's just awful. Because for me, I could never find my way into that idea of copying. However, if she had said to us, here's a Rembrandt portrait, try copying that, that would have been exciting and interesting, and I would have learned
really hard.
And very hard, yes. But you would have learned a lot doing that, whereas copying a photograph of some boats, I was getting nowhere. So we're not quite sure what Eric's copying, but I don't think there's anything wrong with that at the beginning.
Well, it's a tried and tested way to learn, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's been a way to hone your people's visual skills for centuries. So there's nothing inherently wrong in that as a way in. I guess what I would say, and this goes back to your boat scenario, is what you want to be doing. There are so many options in art. There are so many different directions you can go. And all we can ever hope to do is slightly narrow down the edges, funnel ourselves towards one thing or another, and give ourselves the experiences along the way to help inform what decisions we make in the future. And one of the ways that we do that is by trial and error. It is by experiencing something different and knowing if it is for us. And the very process even of selecting a photograph from a pile of photographs that somebody else has chosen, or whether it's you deciding that you sort your own visual material, but even if it's picking a photograph from somebody else's selection, the decisions that you make and the reasons why you choose one image over another to work from, that's part of your information gathering. That's going to help show you what you're interested in now, what you like now,
that's
what
you're
rejecting
key,
now.
It's learning that noticing those things.
Yeah.
Is important, because what I find with beginner artists often is they don't realize that is crucial. What you just said, that I picked that photo, that's important. That says something about me. And one of the interesting things to do is just to go back through all your photos on your phone or your computer and see what you choose to stop and take photos of versus what someone else does, because it will be completely different. And that gives you a clue. And it's what Alice just said is so important, this idea of trusting and being interested in your own interests, like caring about what you like and what you choose and what you notice, because it's different for everyone. I think I've told this story before, but I remember saying to a friend years ago, oh my God, look, because we get this thing here in the Yorkshire landscape and probably in some other places, but we never got it in America, where the sky will go this deep blue when it's going to really rain, but it lights the grass up into this vibrant green. And do you know what I mean? And you get that clash of those two things. And I said, oh my God, look over there. And he said, yep, it's going to piss it down. And I was like, how is that what you see from that?
Yeah.
What I see is an amazing color clash. So it's when you're out on a walk and you annoy everyone by stopping, what are you taking pictures of? You know, are you in town? Are you taking city pictures? Are you walking along Country Lane, taking pictures of a stone wall? What are you interested in? Do you do very close up things? Are you interested in long distance views of things? Are you interested in people? Do all your photographs have people? But no, none of mine do. They all have buildings or whatever it is. And it's really honoring your own preferences that I find people struggle with. They say, oh, you mean that's important? Yeah, I always take pictures of that. I never realized that was important because I've seen other artists do this over here and I'm not doing that. So I thought I should be doing what they're doing instead of honoring what I like to do. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense. And I think we're not encouraged to do it in a lot of other areas, which is why we can feel somewhat adrift. I mean, you've got this thing of that there are so many different ways that you can make art.
Yeah.
How do you possibly choose? But you do have to start making choices. I've got a little thing at the moment on my Instagram in my bio, which says decisions made visible. It's just a little bit of my guiding thing at the moment. It's how I make art. It's why I think art is important. And it's also something to do with living life and getting what you want from life and making sure that you're creating the life that you want to lead, is being conscious about the choices that we take. And then there are different ways that those come into being. And there is no easy answer to this, apart from what I would say at the beginning of it, and I'm sure you'll agree with this, at the beginning of it, and to a degree, all the way through the end, apart from you just getting more confidence with it, there is this very frustrating gap between what you want to create and your frustration with your own abilities to do that. That does continue. I still have that. That frustration, that gap between the Ira Glass gap between what you want and what you're capable of. That's the exciting bit,
because what you want keeps moving.
Yeah,
because what you want keeps going. And talk about that frustration with me going back to drawing. I haven't drawn for a long time, and drawing faces. Give me a face full on, I can give you an exact likeness. Give me a face foreshortened in some way or turned, you know, head down. The air is blue sometimes in my house because I'm like, I should know how to do this. Come on. And that gap between what I want to do and what I can do can be really frustrating. And then you look at other artists who just seem to be doing it so easily. And well, they are, because they'll show you a time lapse of them doing the thing so easily. And that leads to comparisonitis, which can really stop us in our tracks. And what you have to remember, and I fell foul of it on the first day of class, because the teacher showed us his drawing of someone, and I was like, well, bloody hell, that's just fantastic, and I'll never be, that's a beautiful drawing and I'm very envious of that, and I might as well just give up now. Instant thought, not a serious thought, but that is what goes through our head. And then you have to pull yourself up and say, well, if he wasn't able to draw 10 times better than me, why would I be here trying to learn from him? There'd be no point. So we're always going to have, like you say, that gap. And what you learn is that the fun is in the gap. But when you're a beginner, you feel it's not fun. Because at the beginning, you can't do anything, right? You can't get anything right. But as you get more experience and it gets easier, you get some things right. But yeah, I think learning to love the process, which Eric is already doing, because he's already coming home after work and painting every night, he said. So he's way ahead of a lot of people who let that frustration make it a miserable experience.
Yeah.
And then don't want to do it. So I love that he's so enthusiastic. I think the enthusiasm is key. This thing he says, and I think you mentioned it, where if you try and think, okay, what kind of artist am I going to be? Am I going to do portraits, landscapes, florals, still lifes? Am I going to do abstracts? Am I going to invent a whole new kind of art that nobody's ever seen before? Am I going to do concept art or statues or pots? Oh my God, it's too much.
Too much.
And even if then you go, I'm going to do portraits. Okay, what kind of portraits? What kind of style do I want to work in? What kind of people do I want to paint? It's all too much. So what do you say to people in terms of baby steps? Like we said, noticing what you care about and what you're drawn to. But what else can people do to narrow it down for themselves?
I do think that going to an in-person class is really good at this stage. One, because you've signed up for something and you're physically going to be noticed if you opt out, which is often not the way with online things. And everybody is there doing the same thing. And you don't have to have all of those questions. What am I going to do? How is it going to be? What materials am I going to use? You're told. And you learn, and hopefully you have a skillful tutor who is helping you. Honestly, I think you can't beat starting with life classes.
Came back to art doing life classes.
That's how I came back to it too. It is the best training in terms of how do you interpret something three-dimensionally. Like, first of all, there's an element of accuracy that, like, you will know if you get it wrong, but that training your eye to notice spaces, dimensions, angles, relationships. It's not about drawing a body. All of those things are relevant in any kind of art.
Mm-hmm.
And how to express that on a paper with something as simple as a stick of charcoal. How do you use your materials to create energy, calm, changes of direction? It's the best thing. And it's horrendously frustrating.
Yes.
And it will drive you crazy, but it's such a good skill. And if you have a good chunk of time doing that, what you learn in those classes will carry you through any other kind of art you want to make. I don't do figure painting anymore. Mm. I still use things that I learned in all of those live classes that I did every single day.
Mm. And one of the things that's great about an in-person class like that, especially life drawing, because you're all working on the same thing, is that you get to see, I think there were about 15 or 20 people in the group I was in, you get to see 15 or 20 different ways of approaching the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so inspiring to go around and look at everyone else's. And some people will be real beginners who are worse than you, and some people will be better than you. And you get to see the whole scope of what's possible, and you get to chat and meet other artists as well, so other people who are interested in art like you are. And that for me was a big deal, living in quite a rural area where there was no one arty to talk to. Actually, not true, because the woman up the road is a painter, but that's unusual. But apart from her, there was no one else, and being in that room with other people who cared, and a tutor who was, she wasn't really teaching, she was mentoring us and customizing the teaching for each person, which was lovely.
Yeah,
it's brilliant. And like you say, incredibly frustrating. I still remember many hours of foreshortening, cursing, because
you can't leave early. And this is the other thing.
Yeah, like, you even can't if just it's pack frustrating. Up and storm out.
Yeah. And then you've got 2 hours life drawing or 3 hours or whatever it is. And if it's frustrating, you know, you can't leave. You've got to face up to your mistakes a bit. And that's also a valuable lesson to learn. And you just get absorbed in it. And I think that's one of the joys about making art, is what you get absorbed in. So I would think that's a great place to start, unless there is something really particular materials wise that you want to do. So see what's in your area. Notice, think, what would you really like to do? I mean, you know, my time doing printmaking, I loved. And then I got frustrated by the limitations of having to be there. But again, what I learned from that process, I take it back into painting and painting the way that I want to paint. So I think in-person classes are great. And alongside that, I would start some kind of gathering process.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't call it a sketchbook.
Okay. Okay.
Don't call it a sketchbook, because when you say sketchbook, people think they have to do beautiful drawings in it. And do you know what? It could be a shoebox. I like doing it on a pin board. You know, you can make it a book if you want to, but call it a scrapbook. And I know scrapbooking has a whole different load of associations now, but what I mean by a scrapbook is it's just a place where you gather things and stick things, and you can draw and you can put whatever you want in. But there is something that's lovely textural about having a lot of things in there with no rules about what you include. Whereas a sketchbook for me at the beginning, and for a lot of people, has these quite rigid connotations of what it should look like, and I don't think that's helpful.
Yeah, I think keeping it really loose. And when you say gathering, for me in my books, it can be as simple as I've done some work on paper, I haven't liked any of it, but there's one corner I like, chop it out and stick it in. Or take a photograph of something I'm working on that I'm going to cover up, but I like a bit of it. Or stick something in by another artist that I like and write about why. I think all of that, as well as just making notes about what happened, is so valuable. And the other thing that's occurred to me as you talk about gathering is, I don't know how you feel about this, but I've come to feel that learning about other artists is really important. I didn't do an art degree, an art history degree. I don't have any of that formally. But the things that I learn when I read a book about another artist, whether they're famous, not famous, even sometimes when I don't really love their work, just learning about the thought processes and the way art has built on itself and artists have built on other artists helps me to... It inspires me, it gives me new ideas, and it also helps me to see maybe where I might want my little teeny tiny contribution to fit into all of that. I particularly love, I collect books that are artist drawings or artist sketchbooks or artist journals where they write and share their process and their thoughts. Because I think that's so valuable. One of the best ones I've read recently is by an artist whose work has nothing to do with my work and whose work I don't really like, which is Agnes Martin. But there's a book that I bought secondhand where it's a lot of her journals and her thoughts about art making. Absolutely fascinating and really inspiring. So I think that's important. And I often get asked that because some of the students who come into my course don't know anything about art, and we don't know where Eric is on that because they've just come to loving it. They've just discovered they love it later in life. They never knew they were interested, never been to a gallery, never read a book about an artist. I say, find a few artists you love and think about why, and they say, I don't know any artists. And I think that just like learning to draw is really a helpful foundation, I think understanding something about artists in the past and how art's developed is a really valuable foundation. But do you disagree with me?
I don't disagree at all. I think it's a very useful thing to do. One of the things that's tricky about it is that art books can be very expensive. So if you've got libraries that you can go and get books from, great. Secondhand bookshops can be a fantastic place to find, again, particularly in person, because you can browse. Yeah. And, you know, if we're talking about historical artists, doesn't matter if the book's old, right? You know,
I go in the Oxfam bookshop in Skipton, and they have all sorts in there. I just bought a book, of a man's drawings, a Canadian artist. I've never heard of him. His drawings are amazing. So I bought the book for £2.99.
Yeah.
And now I'm looking at the drawings. I don't think I'll ever learn about him particularly, but you know, that kind of thing can be so valuable, I think. And also YouTube is an amazing source of free documentaries and information about artists. There's all sorts on there.
But I think you raise a very interesting point about what's going on behind the scenes. So reading about artists and what was going on in their life, and again, why they were making decisions they were making, what was happening. I think very often those art books can be designed to be, you know, they have very beautiful reproductions in, and we turn the pages and we look at a lot of paintings and we look at it from a visual point of view. But in terms of really shifting things, it's the information that's in the writing, or, you know, perhaps some good podcasts. Mm. But I'm not so good at taking information in an auditory way. I do like having a book, and what I do is I have index cards, because post-it notes can leave sticky marks on the pages. But I use index cards, and I just dip into sections at a time, and I wrote notes on index cards that I can tuck in the pages, so that as I'm looking through the book later, I'm reminded a little bit about what was on each page that I was finding particularly helpful.
Mm-hmm. I think it's not always, and it is all the things you said, learning about the practice and looking at the pictures, but also things often, I was reading a book about Hockney, and the most inspiring thing in the book was when he said that he went to art school. He didn't attend any of the lectures that weren't art related, and apparently that it was supposed to do physics and some other things, and he wouldn't go to those, so they refused him a diploma and said you can't graduate, even though he's first in the art classes and won all the prizes. And he said, I just thought, well, oh well, I don't need a diploma, either I'm good enough or I'm not, so I'll just leave. So he just said, right, well, I'm leaving then, I'm not sitting through all that stuff. And they reneged anyway and gave him a diploma in the end because it was ridiculous not to. I thought, God, that confidence as a young guy from a northern background, in not at all, in those days, quite an impoverished background, to go down to the top art school in London and then to say, all right, well, don't give me it then. I'm going off and I'm going to go live in America. All of that confidence, I found that so inspiring, and it made me think, is that a big part of why Hockney became Hockney, besides his talent, his confidence, and his just, I'm going for it? So things like that, reading about other artists as well, can make you realize, they make kind of shine a mirror on you and your mindset, and make you realize where maybe you've held yourself back.
And also realize where things aren't straightforward. We, you know, we all have a tendency to look at things from the outside, or an artist who's made it at the end of their career, and assume that everything's, you know, on a smooth trajectory. And when you read a bit more, it's never that way.
No.
It's never that way. And that's quite encouraging to know. Nobody knows what the path ahead is. Like, we were only ever doing the bit that we're on now. So there's a huge part which I would say, which is always in the trying to find the enjoyment in the now part of it, knowing that it's not forever.
Mm.
Like, whatever you decide to do now, you won't stick with. Not in the same way. It will shift. Mm. It will change. So be ready for that when it happens. But if you're too worried about where it's heading and where it's going, you won't enjoy the part of it that is now.
I can remember that feeling of rushing. Okay, because I decided to do this when I was 50. So that's about 10 years ago, I think 50. And I thought, right, I'm really going to put myself into this. And I was just the same as Eric. I wasn't copying photographs, but I was making these drawings of the local landscape that were not original. And I was feeling every time I made something, like, people were saying around me, were saying, oh my God, that's amazing, because they can't draw. So they thought it was great. But I was feeling like, I know there's more to making art. And I came to the conclusion that I just don't have any of what it takes, because I don't have an original idea. All I can do is look at the landscape and draw it. And I'm trying to think of the words to describe this. I thought I had to have the whole idea. I thought the way that you became an artist who was making something a bit unique was that you could envision it and then you went off and made it. And because I couldn't envision what it was going to be, I must be lacking in that thing that artists had. And it was only when I realized what you've been saying, that it's gathering and baby steps and doing this and trying that and following the little bits of, I call it following the joy, but following the spark of, oh, that feels good to me. I'm going to do more of that. And also, really important, giving yourself permission to back away from the things that don't feel like that.
Yeah.
So even if Alice and Louise tell you that life drawing is the best thing you can do, you go to life drawing and you spend a whole term doing it and you hate it and it's just not for you, then back away from it and don't do it and find the thing that feels good. If I'd known that that was the way to get to the unique stuff, I wouldn't have had so much, it wasn't stress, but frustration and kind of disappointment in myself that, well, I guess I'm just not that kind of person because I don't have that idea in mind. What I'm making now, I couldn't have envisaged coming from me. It's come in little bits. And I think the same for you, because watching you from a distance, and you've shown early things that you did, early landscapes, mm-hmm. and then I didn't see those at the time, but you've shown them since. But then watching your work progress, it's changed quite a lot.
Huge.
Over the years. And yet you've always been interested in the same general themes, I would say. Would you say?
I think I did do a lot more figure drawing and sort of everyday figure drawing. Like, so I used to have a little sketchbook, and this was when I was still working. So I was squeezing, like, I wasn't doing it for anything. I was just trying to kind of keep skills going, I suppose, drawing people on the tube and that kind of thing for no other reason other than just doing it. I've never done paintings like that. And I think that's something else that's quite interesting to be aware of, is that there are different materials that you enjoy doing for different reasons. And I know that, you know, Eric here is saying he paints every day. Just be aware of when you are ring fencing yourself in a certain area. There is an opportunity to deep dive and to learn about the paint and the material. So if we go back to your sketchbook gathering idea and all the things that you stick in, just mix colors and stick them in. Just keep a record of what colors you're mixing, or what happens when the paint is thick or put on with this kind of tool or implement or different from a brush, or what happens when I make a move fast or slow. At the beginning, you're learning all of that kind of stuff. And there will also be perhaps a whole bunch of side projects that you do and then drop, do and then drop, do and then drop. I don't draw people anymore. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean to say that I never will.
Mm.
But at one point, that was a really important part of what I was doing on a daily basis. It's a flux, you know, it's a change. And that's the fabulous thing about discovering it. You know, you don't have to stay stuck and you don't have to know all the answers to the decisions right now, or even what it's going to be for you.
That's kind of the hard part for a lot of people, because in every other aspect, pretty much of our lives, we want to figure it out and know. I mean, you can't go to work and say, well, I don't know what I'm going to do today. I'm just going to see how it all develops and say to your boss, don't give me tasks. I'm just going to see what happens. I'm going to do one thing and then we'll see what evolves. And we have to be very production oriented and organized and have a process and a system. And you will end up with a process for art making, but it will come only through these experiments. And when you find your own process, it's so much more rewarding. I'm not saying that either of our work is groundbreaking innovation, but I do think that our paintings are recognizably ours. And if I look on Pinterest or Instagram, I don't see anything where I go, mine looks very similar to that. And I don't see that for yours, because it's evolved naturally over time to be the things you like. And our work has evolved in very different ways from each other. because we're very different people.
I don't even care about that. What I care about is feedback that you get when something shifts from the frustration into the, oh, I did that.
Mm.
And what gives you that changes at differences, changes from when you're a beginner. Like often when you're early on, you get that frustration from, I did a thing and it looks like what it's meant to.
Mm-hmm.
And then it can be, I use my materials in a new way and they created something that I could never have predicted. Or I'm struggling with this painting and I've really understood that just making a certain of marks in a particular way with a certain color in an area pull it all together. Your skills will grow, but that, oh, I did that, oh, that feeling is the most delicious feeling. And it's more than, maybe because it's more personal. I don't think you get it from anywhere. Like even with music, maybe if you're composing music, you might get mm-hmm. it. But if you're creating music, as in, so I met a friend this week and he was saying he's joined a choir and he's really enjoying being part of the choir. And I can see how that's really satisfying and a beautiful thing to do. And it's somebody else's music. You know, mm. when I make a recipe and it's really good and it's a lovely, satisfying, nourishing meal at the end of the day, it's lovely and it's food and it's gone. When you get it from making your own art through your own personal struggles and you get those little oomphy moments that you think, oh yeah, I did that.
And that is why we constantly stretch that gap you mentioned that is always there. It's always there because you want that feeling. And the only way you can get that feeling is to give yourself a new challenge.
Yeah.
So when Eric has found something unique and he's making something that feels like him and he's going to want to make it hard for himself by setting a new thing to do, because that's what we do.
Yeah. Let us know. Find some art buddies. That's the last one.
Yes.
You've got a What's Inspired to share with us.
It's quite quick, but I meant to mention this a couple of weeks ago. In case anybody's in London, you can go see this for free. When I was in London, I went to the National Theatre to see a play.
Which is finished now because we checked it out.
Oh, has it? Oh, yeah. Damn. While I was at the play, though, there's a waiting area upstairs where you sit, and there's an art exhibition on in there, and it's by Curtis Holder, who won Portrait Artist of the Year a few years ago on TV. And when he won that, I wasn't so enamored with his work. I was like, but seeing it in person... I saw it after I'd been to the Tate Modern, and I mentioned a few weeks ago that I was a bit bleh about seeing like the Matisse and the Yves Klein just because of how they were exhibited. But this was all of Curtis's work together, and he'd been commissioned to do drawings of all the people who work at the National Theatre, so the dressmakers. And the way he works is he draws in pencil and coloured pencil. But their drawings built up of tiny lines built on lines built on lines, and they're stunning in person. And I was just so blown away. I kept walking around the drawings and taking in everything about them. They were beautiful likenesses, but they were so much more than that. They were just amazing drawings. So I really could see. It just shows you that seeing something on TV versus seeing it in person. I see why he won now.
You know, I was thinking as you're talking about that, I wonder if that is almost a marker or should be a marker of a good piece of art, particularly now that we are so used to seeing things on screen or reduced on screen or even reproduced in a book. But when you see something in person and it's just so much more than.
Yeah.
That's what you want. And, you know, you're walking around the exhibition, you know, I don't know if you took photos or not, but I'm prepared to bet that the photos didn't do justice of the feeling of being there. So you spend time in the presence. It's being in the presence of it, isn't it? It's like, what can I suck in from this?
Yeah. And it was interesting that I was there with someone who's not interested in visual art, who just sat down with a book and didn't even look at them. And I was like, hello, can you see these amazing things on the wall? But no. But going back to Eric and the beginning of this episode, he uses colored pencils. I tend to think of colored pencils as a bit naff. You know, we use colored pencils when we're children. We don't use them in art. but he's pushed them in this really innovative and unique and personal way. And I found that inspiring as well. It's like, oh, there's always possibility to make something new and different if you follow what you love and the way you love to work. And I wonder if he ever felt, oh, I must paint because other people paint and I'm just drawing, or did he always follow what he loves to do? But yeah, really inspiring. So if you're at the National, if you're anywhere near the National Theatre, you can wander in, wander nice. Upstairs and have a look around for free.
Lovely. I hope you have a wonderful week, everybody. And we will catch up with you next time. Keep painting, keep finding your thing you want to suck in life.
That sounds a bit rude.
I'm thinking of that pile of spaghetti in, is it Lady and the Tramp? That. Go and do that. Have a lovely week. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.